Welcome to the Earth Station MCU podcast, your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, The Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and so much more. Visit us at our Facebook group, Earth Station MCU, at earthstationmcu.wordpress.com, or email us at earthstationmcu@gmail.com. Marvel Universe. My name is Jennifer Hartshorn, and welcome back to another episode of Earth Station MCU. Well, we've got another pretty awesome episode of Agent Carter this week. We've got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of plot lines moving forward, and we got a lot of stuff going on. So, how you doing, John?
Doing all right. You know, it's been a long week. I'll be glad to get to the weekend.
Yeah. It's been There's lots going on, and it's just tiring.
Yeah.
But I have a super busy weekend coming up, but then hopefully things will get a little bit more mellow, which would be good.
I have to agree with that. That would be nice.
Indeed. So, first of all, I want to say we were talking about something last week as if it was a for sure done deal. Cate Blanchett is not officially confirmed for Thor. So.
Right, but of course, at one point, neither was Mads Mikkelsen for Doctor Who. Doctor Strange.
For Doctor Strange, right. Yeah, we got Doctor Who on the brain. There was an announcement. We're very excited that someone might be coming.
Not necessarily an announcement. I don't know if they're just quoting Doctor Who or if they're teasing us.
They're not
officially saying anything yet.
Yeah, I think that is. But yes, you're right. Just like there have been a bunch of things where it was rumored, like, oh, it's rumored that Hulk is going to be in Thor. Oh no, he's not. So yeah, it's
like, oh yes, he is.
Exactly. So it's possible that it's true, but I mean that's the tricky thing about fandom nowadays is that there are some media outlets, the Mirror in England being a big one,
yes.
But who, if they hear something, they'll run with it as if it's a sure thing, like it's definitely true, and it ends up being true often enough that they have some kind of credibility. But they're throwing spaghetti all to see what'll stick.
Yeah, you know, it's really reporting rumor more than it is any kind of hard facts. It's like we've been seeing with the BBC and Doctor Who lately is like,
right.
Peter Capaldi is going to be out with the new showrunner. And Peter's like, oh, no, I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Right. And then when you actually read that article in particular, the one that was saying, oh, he's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
They were quoting him, but they were quoting him from like years ago when he said things like, you know, eventually I'm sure I'll want to move on. But it was totally out of context.
Right.
So unfortunately, we've got that particular Doctor Who one on the brain, but it happens all the time for Marvel too. And, on our Facebook group, we try to keep it to actual news and not speculation, but we got a little carried away because I really want Cate Blanchett to be in that because I think the only other casting thing that I have been as excited and about was Tilda Swinton in Doctor Strange. So
you know, the whole thing reminds me of I saw somebody did a meme recently, and they put a picture up in a radio newsroom. A post-it note said, Jesus loves you, and somebody else came along with another post-it note that said, we'll need two sources.
Exactly. I mean, it's one thing when you have something that is, like, directly posted by, James Gunn from his Facebook account. You know, that's legit.
Right.
But when it's a source inside Marvel says, blah, blah, blah.
Speaking of which, we did get something from him this week.
We did.
Yeah, they did. They sat down to do the table read in Atlanta for Guardians Volume 2.
Yep, we've been seeing a number of pictures from the set. We've seen Michael Rooker, and we've seen him defacing Chris Pratt's name tag, yeah. And just lots of fun things like that. Which
and we've
is
seen
fun
Chris because... Pratt's been posting in his Instagram because he's doing Guardians. He's also doing another film down in Atlanta at Pinewood as well.
Exactly, and he's actually been down here for a while working on that.
Yeah.
So lots of stuff going on in Atlanta, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. But of the things that are it sounds like for sure, we've had an announcement that Delroy Lindo is going to be in the spin-off series from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Marvel's Most Wanted.
Yeah, he's going to be kind of an older character from the Marvel Universe called Dominic Fortune, who was kind of pretty much a soldier of fortune, mm-hmm. essentially. And so he had a lot of old adventures back in the day. And he showed up recently in the last S.H.I.E.L.D. comic book series as a much, because he was a character from, like the 1950s and 60s.
Uh-huh.
And he shows up as kind of like an aged version of himself, needing Coulson's help to get back a gambling riverboat that he owns.
Oh, neat! Very cool. Yeah, yeah. And he's a great actor. That is a racial switch, though, right?
It is. Dominic Fortune in comics is white, and of course Delroy Lindo is black.
But that seems like he seems like a good choice for that kind of a character, soldier of fortune, swashbuckling adventure type. And it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with Mockingbird and Lance Hunter too. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what other kind of characters that they bring in. And since it's happening at the same time as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's no saying that there can't be crossover stuff there.
Oh, it's always possible. I mean, we even saw, like I said, in the comics that he shows up in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right, right, exactly. So that'll be exciting. Another announcement that we had recently was one of the writers from Jessica Jones is going to be working on the Iron Fist series that's coming up. His name is Scott Reynolds. Yep. He worked on Dexter previously, mm-hmm. and then also on Jessica Jones.
And if you're trying to figure out which episodes, probably the most prominent one that he wrote was the finale, Smile.
Right. Yeah. And which was amazing, and mm-hmm. and that was just an episode that had so much gut-wrenching, angst in it and everything. So I'm looking forward to, and it's interesting because with him writing, Dexter and Jessica Jones, I think of that as being very psychological,
mm-hmm.
and that's not necessarily what I'm expecting for Iron Fist. That I'm thinking of it as being more of an action series, but we'll see how it goes.
I don't know. I thought the action in some of his episodes was very good, and of course, the fights between Jessica and Luke, and the fight ultimately between Jessica and Purple Man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to expect from Iron Fist. I haven't read any of it, so can you? I mean, I think of it as being kind of a martial arts kind of thing, right?
It really is, because Danny Rand is his father. Stumbled upon a mystical city in the Himalayas called Kunlun.
Mm-hmm.
And through all this, he brings his son Danny there when Danny gets older. Danny essentially fights a dragon and earns the power of the Iron Fist.
Right, which, like you do.
Yeah, which, as they say in the comics, renders his chi unto a thing of iron. So he can basically, kind of explains itself. Yeah, he's got iron fists. And
right.
It's also been kind of criticized over the years as being one of these, the mystical white savior sort of
right.
stories.
Mm-hmm. And that's something, again, we can speculate, but that there's been a lot of discussion around that.
Right.
About, how are they going to deal with that? Are they and I mean it's a perennial question.
Mm-hmm.
We've certainly seen that, although many people were unhappy with how it was dealt with, but with
right.
the Mandarin, right? Because, you know, that was something where the original comic was like the most ridiculous racist stereotype.
It's very much, it plays on the whole Fu Manchu yellow peril
right.
stereotype.
And, you know, you can't, while that's, you know, maybe appropriate for a comic book, you know, from 40 years ago or something, you know, or even more recently, you know, right. when you're doing a live action thing, it's different. You're going to have an actual person saying those lines yes. and whatnot. And so, you know, I know many people were very unhappy with the way that the Mandarin was handled,
right.
but I will say that, you know, just like they updated Tony's backstory to be Afghanistan mm-hmm. instead of Vietnam, it totally makes sense that if you're making a character to scare Westerners, that they're going to be more of a Bin Laden-type character than, you know, a Chinese Fu Manchu kind of character.
Right. Well, of course, I mean, we know that our lead terrorist from Iron Man, he wasn't the Mandarin. They gave the rumors and the kind of the inclinations that he could be between the rings and the organization's
right.
name. And but, you know, and
but in
see,
the one shot.
Yeah, in the one shot, we find out, of course, he's not the Mandarin. Neither is, you know, Trevor Slattery.
Right.
And the real Mandarin is quite ticked.
Right, exactly. So, but that's just an example of something where, you know, mm-hmm. they if they had done it the way that it had been done previously, that probably wouldn't have been good.
It's just one of those things where it's hard to kind of please everybody because you either do it faithfully and folks are going, well, you've got a racist stereotype Asian villain
right.
versus why have you cast this old white guy to be this Asian character?
Now, in the case of Ben Kingsley, he's, you know, he's not, you know, just a lily white guy.
Right.
He has played exactly, you know, he's of, I believe of Indian descent.
Yes. I believe, I want to see his mother.
Yeah. But anyway, mm-hmm. yeah, it's, you know, in that particular case, they made a change for it being, to Middle Eastern
right.
in appearance, at least, as opposed to Asian. But on the other hand, we've got things like Tilda Swinton playing the Ancient One, where a lot of people are unhappy about the whitewashing there.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with that and how they handle that.
I think I think there's a happy medium to be found there. I mean, I think
sure.
you can find a mixed race actor who could satisfy everybody and still successfully play Danny Rand. And we look at someone like Chloe Bennett, who mm-hmm. herself is half Chinese. I think that would be the best thing for everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She looks like super white to me. I don't, when I look at her, I don't see that at all. But
go find the her music videos.
Absolutely, that's definitely what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that'll be interesting, and I look forward. And we'll talk when we get into the actual episode part about the way that the MCU has dealt with race sometimes. But another thing that just came up today was Mark Ruffalo was being quoted as mm-hmm. talking about what was going to be going on with the Hulk. People were obviously asking him again about, oh, are you going to get a standalone movie? And of course he's not, and we've gone
right.
into the reasons behind that. But he's saying, let's see, what is it that he said? It's not on the horizon, Ruffalo tells Yahoo, mm-hmm. about a solo Hulk film, and I don't know that it will be, but the big guy will be popping up in the next Thor movie. And we've worked out a really interesting arc into Thor 3, Avengers 3 and 4, by which I assume he means Infinity War, for Banner that I think will, when it's all added up, feel like a Hulk movie, a standalone movie. So, and that's coming directly from Ruffalo. So
I mean, because we have the problems with Universal, like I said, it's not going to get a Hulk standalone anytime soon.
Right.
So I think this is part of the reason why they're incorporating him into Thor 3 is
mm-hmm.
to try to get more Hulk exposure, even though they can't make a Hulk film.
Right, right. You know, it's like the fact that, you know, you've had Black Widow in, you know, in Winter Soldier and things like that. You know, weaving characters into stuff is something that they're definitely doing. So that'll be interesting. And he's specifically saying that it's, you know, it's a story arc for Banner. It's not just, you know, CGI. Mm-hmm. which definitely, you know, again, we had another round of rumors go around about Ragnarok being like Planet Hulk and guys just know, you know, I may be wrong, I may be totally wrong, but I really think that's not, it just doesn't seem to fit to me, but we'll see how it goes. I don't think it's, I think we're gonna have to wait a few more movies to see space stuff crossing over with the main MCU timeline as opposed to just Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're really going to see that until Infinity War happens, but who knows?
So, let's see. Another thing that that came up was we had the London Toy Fair, and of course there's you know, all kinds of Lego stuff coming out, and this may be a bit of a spoiler, so apologies to anyone if it is, but you want to tell us a little
stick
bit about
the... Stick your fingers in your ears and go la 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 la. Yes. Yeah, no, it's a big toy fair. So of course Lego rolls out everything else that they're going to have this year, mm-hmm. and unfortunately they don't really allow pictures, mm-hmm. but they of course do allow journalists and others to write descriptions of the sets that they see. Mm-hmm. And out of all the Marvel sets, they included one of Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. And they said that the Doctor Strange set basically it's kind of a smaller version of the Sanctum Sanctorum, mm-hmm. and you get Doctor Strange, you get Wong, and apparently there's a portal with some red tentacled monster coming out of it, so probably we can assume some demon from the dark dimension trying to force its way into our world.
Right, and that's going to be interesting because, I mean, there are so many different ways that you can go with that kind of a plot line. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, because that's the whole thing is that, again, we're kind of taking on a different genre here. You know, we're looking at something that is, you know, it's more fantasy, more magical.
Right. Yeah, we're really moving into the mystical with Doctor Strange, because, of course, we're going to get a little bit of it in Iron Fist. Mm-hmm. With Danny and Kunlun and his backstory, but
we're getting Doctor Strange earlier.
Yeah, and we're plunging straight into it, full force with Doctor Strange.
And it'll be interesting to see. You know, we're talking about crossovers and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It seems like that's going to be a tricky one to work in, unless he ends up, you know, meeting up with Scarlet Witch or something, because it just seems like his world is very different than the main Avengers team.
Yeah, we don't know exactly, although of course his mystical item, the Eye of Agamotto, mm-hmm. certainly looks a lot like an Infinity Stone.
Indeed. So that will be interesting when you've got, you know, mm-hmm. core items like that, you know, if that's like his main thing, and then, you know, you've got Vision walking around with an Infinity Stone in his forehead, you know.
Yeah, because that means we've got three different Infinity Stones sitting right on Earth. Well, no, two on Earth.
Well, we haven't recapped this in a while. Remind me what we've got for Infinity Stones and where they are. We've got the Tesseract, which is the mind gem, right?
Right, and of course that was taken to Asgard at the end of Avengers.
Right.
We had the Aether in Thor 2, uh-huh. and that was given to the Collector. Presumably that's still in his collection. Mm-hmm. We have the Mind Stone, which was first part of Loki's staff, and then is now implanted in the Vision's forehead.
Okay, yep.
So that's on Earth. Mm-hmm. Of course, we also have the Power Stone, which was brought to the Collector, but then is now in the custody of the Nova Corps at the end of Guardians.
Yep, the Glenn Close's character, right?
Right.
Yep.
Nova Prime.
Indeed.
So we've still got the Time Stone and Oh, sorry. Yeah, the Aether, which is the Reality Stone, by the way, I forgot to mention.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But we got the Time Stone and we've got the Soul Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, you know, at one point there was a rumor that there was going to be possible time travel going on in Guardians, and so right. I was assuming that was where we were going to end up with the Time Stone, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, given some hints that suggest that the Time Stone may actually be the Eye of Agamotto.
Ah, interesting.
And some of its abilities to mess with probabilities and likely outcomes
mm-hmm.
would suggest time rather than soul.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, speculation on the soul gem, where we're going to see that come up?
I mean, we've only got so many left. It would either have to show up in Guardians, or they'll hold off until Infinity War Part 1.
Now, is Ant-Man and the Wasp before or after Infinity 1?
It is before, but I really don't see an Infinity Stone popping up in Ant-Man.
Yeah. And I guess the one of the other ones that's before that would be Spidey, which would be very interesting if they worked that in somehow.
They've definitely said, no, we're doing a John Hughes-type superhero comedy for Spider-Man, right. And that's going to be it.
Right, exactly. So we'll see. But there's also, you know, there's also the fake Infinity Gauntlet in Asgard, right?
Yeah, apparently I guess there's more than one they said at one point, and Thanos certainly has one. So it's really more or less the gauntlet itself is just a glove. You put
right.
the stones in it, and that's where the power comes from.
Right, so you could have as many gloves as you want, but if they're not full of stones, then they're not the Infinity Gauntlet.
Right.
And so once you catch them all, once you've got the whole set together, what is it that it can do?
Anything.
Pretty much anything.
It is probably the most powerful artifact in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
When you can manipulate time, space, mm-hmm. souls, minds, power.
That's pretty much the full package.
Yeah.
And that explains why we're going to have an all hands on deck in order to take him out, because... You know,
usually anytime Thanos gets the Infinity Gauntlet in the Marvel comics,
mm-hmm.
it is a big event and everybody has to stop him.
Right, and not only that, it's not like you can say, oh, well, we're taking it away from you and here, Tony, you know, or here, anyone. It's, you know, anyone having that kind of power is just...
Even
just
in the comics,
after they've
acquired the Infinity Stones, a group... known as basically the Illuminati,
okay.
which in the comics is Namor the Submariner, Professor mm-hmm. Xavier, Mr. Fantastic,
okay.
Tony Stark, and Black Panther.
Basically all the team leads.
Yeah, and Black Bolt from the Inhumans all at least have one stone for safekeeping to make sure mm-hmm. that you know nobody puts them all together. And, of course, out of all those six characters, we really only have two that are available in the MCU.
Right, right.
So we're probably not going to see them popping up as a group.
Exactly. You know, unless things change. We got Spidey back. You never know. It could happen.
I hope and dream, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Fox just doesn't want to play ball.
And I understand that because it's, you know, it's one of their... Well, the X-Men, anyway, are one of their most successful properties.
Yeah, and they continue to be successful. And, I mean, Deadpool's looking to have a huge weekend.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think it's going to be like Star Wars big or even
Avengers. No, because
even Avengers
it's mostly, you're going to have to be 18 and up to see it.
Well, you're going to have to be 18 and up to see it. And, you know, as much as I love the ad campaign that they're doing with it, making it look like a romantic comedy, which is hilarious, you know, that's not everybody is going to want to go see, you know,
right.
An action movie with a potty-mouthed star in it, you know?
Well, you know, all you guys taking your girlfriends to see it under the guise that it's a romantic movie, more power to you.
More power to you, but, you know, good luck sleeping on the couch, man. You know, that's...
I have a feeling Deadpool will be worth it.
Yes, exactly. And hopefully most of you that are listening to this do have spouses that are and significant others that are within the religion, as it were, of the MCU. Because you don't date outside the religion of geekdom. It never goes well.
You know, I have friends who do, and they eventually, their wives tolerate their geek side, and you know, I think it can work in that situation.
It works
better, I think, when both people are
absolutely
into it.
Absolutely. So we've got Deadpool coming up. We're gonna have to do a few Marvel outside the MCU, sort of like Marvel Cinematic Multiverse episodes coming up, because I mean, I'm definitely going to see Apocalypse, and I want to talk about that too. So,
and you know, I think it might be nice if we can address pre-MCU Marvel movies.
That's true. We could do that over the summer.
Fine. I want some Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not going to say no to it. We go back in on Earth Station Who. We listen to, you know, we watch the classic episodes, and other than that one 1980s Fantastic Four, I don't think anything is going to be as painful to watch as like a 12 episode black and white Doctor Who episode.
Wow, yeah,
Master Plan of the Daleks is just that was
brutal. The War Games.
Yep. There's a lot of them. Not to mention, you know, all of the. Yeah, again, as bad as 70s American special effects are, they're not as bad as 70s BBC special effects.
Yeah,
so,
you do have to wonder with some of those old episodes, how did you draw this out for so long?
Yes, and no offense to the Whovians, and obviously John and I are both big Doctor Who fans, and definitely. I was just talking with somebody today about how they need to show their friends City of Death as one of the episodes before it goes off of Netflix, because City of Death is one of the best episodes in the history of the series. But anyway,
I dare no one can be as stupid as he looks.
Indeed. And it has costumes that are clearly made out of yarn and paint, but it's cool. So yes, I look forward to looking at some of those hidden gems, shall we say, of the pre-MCU Marvel on film collection. So, alrighty, well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be talking about this week's episode of Agent Carter, Better Angels.
Okay, auditions for the new Earth Station Who co-host. Take one, go ahead.
Hello, Stonehenge, who takes the Pandora Cup, takes the universe, but, bad news everyone, cause guess who, ha, listen, you lot you're always ing about, it's really very distracting. Could you all just stay still a minute because I am talking?
Not bad. Can you do another? Maybe something less wordy.
He's like fire and ice and rage. He's like the night and the storm in the heart of the sun. He's ancient and forever. He burns at the center of time and can see the turn of the universe, and he's wonderful.
Wow, a little dark. Anything a little lighter?
There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes.
Maybe. Got something a little fresher?
I am not a good man. And I'm not a bad man, I am not a hero, and I'm definitely not a president, and, no, I'm not an officer, do you know what I am? I am an idiot, with a box and a screwdriver.
Not too shabby. Can you close this up?
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating over 50 years of the Doctor Who universe. You never know where the TARDIS is going to go next. Earth Station Who Podcast can be found at www.earthstationwho.com. Earth Station Who is a proud member of the ESO Network. We are up on Facebook, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we are done. Did I pass the audition?
We'll get back to you. Next!
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One Podcast Network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net.
Welcome back, everybody. And now we are going to talk about this week's episode of Agent Carter, which was titled Better Angels. So, a lot of stuff going on this week. I had the feeling that we had not seen the last of the Good Doctor, I was right. He's back.
He has returned. Well, in a manner of speaking.
Indeed. And there's one of our folks on our Facebook group posted up something that was I think was it Bear that posted the Jason Wilkes thing?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yes. So shout out to Bear. He posted up something from the Marvel database on Wikia that is talking about Jason Wilkes in the Earth 616 universe, which is the comics version of the MCU. Right. And he was a scientist who was contacted by a communist agent who offered him $1 million to create an invisibility ray. However, he goes ahead and takes the money for it and finds out that when he tests it on himself, it makes him intangible as well as invisible, and he has no way of turning on the antidote. So, obviously, similar idea in that you've got, you know, invisible and intangible, but very different backstory there.
Yeah, definitely, because in this case, it's not caused by zero matter, or it's caused by zero matter,
right,
as opposed to creating an invisibility ray that works a little too well. But they do, of course, incorporate the whole communist agent into it as Isodyne
kind of
Industries has been framing Wilkes to look like he's trying to develop or sell zero matter to the Russians.
Right, exactly. And obviously that's, you know, in this case, apparently that was actually true and he was selling out, but in Agent Carter, he's a good guy.
Yeah. It's one of those, great, sci-fi comics that popped up in the 1950s when we didn't have as many superheroes. And
right.
You'll notice one of the things, if you look at the theater,
mm-hmm.
The theater marquee in the episode says Whitney Frost in Tales of Suspense.
Mm-hmm.
Tales of Suspense being one of Marvel's sci-fi comics from back in the day.
I did not know that. Cool.
You see, like, as I believe that's actually the first place where Iron Man is shown. Like, his origin story is in Tales of Suspense.
Very cool. And yeah, we have a lot of Easter eggs and whatnot. We've got the movie that Howard is making is based on Kid Colt.
Kid Colt, yeah, who is another 50s character. Essentially, to give listeners a bit of a brief background, back in the late 1940s, early 50s, a psychologist named Dr. Frederick Wortham attributed violence and superheroes in comics to all kinds of juvenile delinquency.
Right.
So they tend to fall out of favor, and instead
that was the comics code, right?
Right. That was the eventual development of the comics code came from this. And in the meantime, in the 50s, as superheroes became less popular, you started seeing more romance comics, which is mm-hmm. where we get Patsy Walker from. You get the kind of the Tales of Suspense, Tales to Astonish, mm-hmm. where Ant-Man and Iron Man eventually show up. And you get Western comics, mm-hmm. such as Kid Colt.
Right. And Jonah Hex over on the other side of the fence.
Right. And there were several other Marvel Western heroes who pop mm-hmm. up during this time, but Kid Colt's certainly one of the more prominent ones.
Yeah, and of course there's an awesome, you know, sort of internal continuity diss there where he says to Peggy that, you know, people aren't ready for a cowgirl as a main character, and she's like, yeah, but you're basing things on comics.
So. Well, you know, they based it on comics even back then.
Oh, sure.
We had Superman serials, Batman serials. We even had a Captain America serial that was absolutely nothing like the comic book other than the costume.
Right, right, exactly. So that was a fun little Easter egg there. And we had another just random thing was when they were setting up the security system for the Stark mansion grounds, and Jarvis has a line something like, wouldn't that be terrible if I just became a disembodied voice?
Yeah, because he's setting up the security system, and if you remember from Iron Man, whenever Christine Everhart tries to touch the panel, you hear Paul Bettany go, "You're not authorized to access this area."
Right.
Which is
right.
The exact same thing that Edwin's voice says over the loudspeaker.
Awesome. That's awesome. So a lot of very good in jokes there. But yeah, we had a good episode. We had a lot of different things sort of crossing over together. Of course,
oh, yeah.
we had Whitney Frost and her. We didn't really have a lot of her in the first part, I guess. The main thing, of course, that happened with her was that her director came in towards the end, mm-hmm. and basically said they wanted to fire you because you're too old, but I stuck up for you, and now I'm totally going to make a pass at you.
Yeah, and of course, when she pushes him away, there's the Zero Matter coming out and boom.
Right. So apparently she has the ability, and she like absorbed him or something.
Yeah, and then the scar got bigger.
Exactly. Exactly. So so interesting thing there. Also, yeah. You know, there was this has definitely been something that.
Well, one thing I liked about her in this episode is we get to see even more of kind of how a Lady Macbeth she is, because
yes.
she comes in complaining to Cal about mm-hmm. how Carter's not going to quit. We need to do something about
right.
him. He's like, no, I'll make a few calls to the arena club. We'll
yep.
pull some strings. We'll get her taken off this. And of course, she pulls crocodile tears to be like, that's not going to be good enough. You need to send an assassin to kill her.
Right, right. Exactly.
Which goes so well.
Yeah, well, she doesn't quite know what she's up against. So,
yep.
You know. But yeah, and believe me, I cringed at the, and she visibly cringed when her husband was like, she was like, yeah, I'm thinking of getting out of movies because really, can you do movies with a giant black scar across your face? And she's like, yeah, I think I'm going to get out of movies. And he's like, oh, not until I'm done with my campaign. Then you can have all the babies that you want.
Well, and, yeah, that's not condescending at all.
Yeah, I can't really see.
Yeah, so it's we come to find out in this episode as well that that of course Whitney Frost is not her real name. It was Agnes Curry,
mm-hmm.
and she basically developed a kind of a communications technology that the Allies used during World War II. Which is very similar to the real-life story of Hedy Lamarr and her invention of frequency hopping that was used in radar and is still used in military technology today.
Exactly. And Hedy Lamarr was also a famous Hollywood actress.
Yes.
So,
fortunately for us, she was not a supervillain.
Indeed, indeed. That we know of.
Yes.
Right. But yeah, so that's a cool little tip of the hat to something that really happened around then. Mm-hmm. So that's cool, but yeah, definitely she's shaping up to be an interesting villain. Also, I'm gonna definitely put in, and I'm blanking on his name. I'm gonna call him Red from that '70s show, and I know that's not.
Yeah, his character is Vernon Masters.
That's it, Vernon Masters. Okay, I can remember that. So Vernon Masters definitely on the villain side of things now.
Because, yeah,
you know he's. Mm-hmm. At my first thing, and I commented this somewhere online this week, was that I wasn't sure if we should definitely put him in the Hydra camp just yet, because I was like, it's possible that he's just, you know, a scheming government guy. You know, it's not necessary that everybody has a tie into
yeah.
Hydra or Leviathan or something. But in this one we see...
Yeah.
That he's part of the arena club is what they're calling it.
Yeah, he brings, because of course he brings Thompson into it, introduces him to Cal,
mm-hmm.
and that's when we see that that Vernon is also wearing an arena pin.
Exactly. Although it makes me wonder what the deal is with those pins, because why would Dottie have gone to so much trouble to break into a bank to get one?
I assume we'll find out as the season goes on.
I'm sure we will, but I don't have any idea of what that could be. There's got to be some technology or something in there, which is interesting because that probably is placing Dottie on the other side, on the side against the Arena Club guys, which means there's at least a chance we will end up with her and Peggy teaming up this season.
I mean, I didn't think it happened. I don't think the SSR has as good a hold on her as they think they do. Well, especially after how she attacked Thompson.
Oh yeah, and I believe that Mr. Agent Masters has taken her over because she's a communist and so on and so forth. So I believe that she's not in SSR custody anymore.
Yeah, she's currently in FBI custody, but she's in Vernon Masters custody, which I know what that means.
Indeed. So we've got that going on. Thompson being a super dick in this episode.
Yeah, he had to get put in his place.
Yeah. The whole introduction of him in this episode is he's coming out and he's saying, well, I'm rewriting your reports to be lies, basically, you know, to say that, when I chased down the Russian spy, and it's like, Peggy's like, no, that's not what happened.
We can't, wait. And, you know, Thompson is like, well, we can't have it out that you were running around with a black man. I was like, wait, what? Seriously?
Well, and a Soviet spy, supposedly, as well. So, and that's another thing that I've seen some. There was a good article on the AV Club this week about the fact, and I've seen a number of great articles on this, on, as we were saying in the first part, about how Marvel and specifically the MCU has dealt with the issue of race. And obviously in the first season of Agent Carter, a lot of it was about gender and about the way that people treat Peggy because of her gender.
Right.
And that has more or less gotten dealt with the exception of Thompson, really. Most of the people that she's dealing with have a lot of respect for her as an agent and are not being condescending and telling her to, you know, take a memo and get them coffee and stuff.
Except for the people who don't know her.
Right. And she absolutely plays to that that assumption. Like, I loved her her line this week about something about, I get so confused when I'm around all these books. That was great. But anyway, we've seen it with the gender issue and you know, even in things like the way that that Thompson underestimated Dottie too. And obviously was not expecting that. But we have not had a lot of diversity on Agent Carter, which, given the time period we're talking about, is understandable. We did have, you know, some people in the Howling Commandos, but they were really only in there for the one episode. And so we finally get a very cool, very competent actor of color playing Jason, and all of a sudden, the way that the plot has gone, he is now invisible and inaudible and intangible. So I think,
and he requires Howard Stark to make him visible again.
Right, exactly. He has no agency. He is only able to have agency through the proxy or through the help of a white man. So I think they're obviously making a point there. It's just difficult because I see what they're doing and I get it, but it's also kind of unfortunate that's the way that they're dealing with it. I mean, I understand, but on the other hand, you also, if you want to maintain any kind of verisimilitude with the real world, you can't have Peggy just running around with a well-dressed black guy and not have that be, at the very least, very, very memorable to people.
Right, and of course we see that when they go into the bakery, you know, when immediately
he's asking the baker, if she's all right.
Are you all right, miss? And, you know, I'm not talking to you.
Exactly. So it's an interesting way of dealing with that to allow him to be a major character but not attract that attention because he's invisible. But, you know, it's
and, of course, it ties into a character in the comics as well.
Exactly. And it ends up being very cool because obviously the Whitney Frost and the Aes Sedain people think that he's dead. So we've got, you know, we've got insight into that as well. I'm interested to see what they're going to do with that. But and I think it's a fun plot line. Mm-hmm. But I hope that he gets control over that in some way so that he has his own agency back.
Yeah, and between him and Howard Stark, I mean, you got a couple of geniuses in the room now to be able to figure out something.
Exactly. So that's going to be fun. What else we got going on this week?
Going back to Thompson and Masters.
Uh-huh.
Thompson got the film back for him.
Right. He got that, and one of the things that he went off on Peggy for was that when she infiltrated the arena club, she saw this newspaper with tomorrow's date on it about the opposition candidate dropping out of the race, and she tells Thompson, and Thompson's like, but you didn't bring it back? What are you,
and there's not, and it's not just, you know, an article about that. There's two articles.
Right.
One, if he decides to cooperate, which is just he graciously decides to step aside.
Right.
And the other being, if he doesn't, they're going to blow up a sex scandal on him.
Right, exactly. And, but then when he actually goes to the club, he actually sees the newspaper and realizes, oh, wait, she was actually right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
And it's also, you know, it leads to Thompson, who, of course, you know, as often as he is a jerk, we do kind of give him a little less credit than he deserves.
True.
He's smart enough at the very end to tell Vernon that he hadn't seen the footage when we know that he has.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, a lot of people are making him out to be Agent Carter's version of Ward. You know, somebody who's going to betray the good guys and who's, you know, up to no good. And whereas with Ward, and I know we've talked about this many times, I don't see redemption as being in the cards for Ward because, at this point he's gone way too far. And at this point, you know, is there even a Ward to come back to? But
probably not.
But with Thompson, as much as he can be a jerk, I think there's still very much a potential for him to get brought back into the fold. He's not an idiot. He's not blinded to what's going on. He's just a product of his time.
He's a jerk with a heart of gold, basically. Like he's does crappy things, but he's on the side of the good guys, and he would not betray them.
Right, exactly. You know, as much as, you know, he has a personal grudge against Peggy, you know, just for being competent. He would have that probably against any other agent who was as competent as she was. So,
well, she also knows his big secret.
Right, exactly.
Which is, you know, the great moment when she puts him in his place by kind of subtly reminding him that she knows.
Exactly. That was a good little takedown there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping next week that we get to see Anna Jarvis again because she was awesome. I look forward to her being around.
And I look forward to much more of her.
Indeed. And also Sousa's girlfriend. I'm hoping we see her again because she was very cool. And
you have to wonder where that triangle is going to go.
Indeed.
Or it's a quadrangle, I guess, now if we include Wilkes.
True. You know, I think that she definitely, as much as on some level, I think we want to ship Sousa and Peggy, Wilkes is really cool, you know, and I would not have any problem with her having having a romance with him, although him being intangible does make it a little bit difficult.
I just do ultimately, I'm still shipping Sousa and Peggy, and I kind of hope that happens, but, you know, who knows?
Who knows? This is a Whedon-affiliated show, so there's probably no chance.
But Whedon's aren't running it, so, I mean, we got a chance.
That's true. I guess there's a chance for true love to triumph on this show. So now it's time to do ratings. Are we doing flamingos, or what are we doing?
Yeah, let's go with flamingos.
I think that's going to be this season's thing. So,
like, 1 to 5 Bernards.
Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 5 Bernards, where would you place this episode?
I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
I very much enjoyed all the Easter eggs.
Mm-hmm.
I love how it ended with, you know, Whitney using the Dark Force even unintentionally.
Yep.
I loved finding out that Vernon is part of the Arena Club and is definitely evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's really felt like this was the first episode to really start building towards something.
Yes. I will... let me think. I think I'm actually going to go with 4.5 Bernards, because this, while I felt like the first couple of episodes were a little bit scattered, I don't know, this just seemed much more focused. You had some really good fight scenes, which is important to me on my action shows. A lot of good kicking ass. And like I said, when I compare, like, the fight that she had with the Aes Sedain assassin guy who came after her to, like, the one she had with Dottie in the first episode, it's like they're not even the same show. It's so much better. And I think that what they're doing with a lot of the way that they're filming things, a lot of the camera work is very, mm-hmm. very, very evocative of that time period and everything.
Right.
And I agree. I think it's all coming together now. It's gelling together like a much better, more cohesive whole than it did in the first two episodes.
Definitely. Actually, I want to switch mine to yours now, so I'll go with the 4.5
okay,
as well.
Okay, fair. All right. Well, that about wraps us up for this week, but we will be coming to you on a weekly basis from now on until the end of Agent Carter's run. So we will see you back here in 1 week's time.
A little bird once said to me, you gotta live a little before you're happy, and if you take a lot, you'll be left with none. I had to learn a bit, live a bit, let it all sink in a bit.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.